Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. Got Max, and David has made a triumphant return, despite spending all weekend moving. So be kind to him, everyone. Please be kind to him.
I am very brittle at the moment.
So guys, we actually feel good after an away match, which is new. we all sort of figured we were going to play well, but it's such a strange match, and we'll have to get into that in a little while. But just to sum up everything for the podcasters out there, we got a jam-packed show, so we want to launch into it as quickly as possible. We're going to begin by talking about Edwards' instant match reaction, because he was there, he got a little video, and that little video did pretty well. And it's mainly because of the Cenk Tosun supporters that are out there. They're great. So there's that. So then we'll plow into our Stoke match reaction, just give our thoughts. And then we'll actually talk. We'll directly address the Cenk Tosun, Beşiktaş, Turkish football, Everton phenomenon. You know, we're trying to analyze this, try to figure out how it works. Because does England have anything like that? Does America have anything like that? Have we seen anything like this before? It's just new for us. Then we'll talk a little bit about Fonseca. More stories about him out there. Will he be the next manager of Everton? We don't know. But there's a little story. We'll give a little bit of attention. Then we'll do a Remember Me. We'll do it on Landon Donovan. Because despite the fact that we don't get to see a lot of U.S. national team players playing this summer, we at least can talk about them. And I'll cry afterward. And then we'll finish up with some old transfer rumors. Okay? Some strange ones. So, guys, I'll go ahead and play Edwards' instant match reaction for you now for the podcasters. Here we go.
We actually won away. I mean, it was against 10 men. We did get the red card. I didn't know, but I tell you what a game. If you've enjoyed this last day vlog, leave a like, leave a comment down below. Subscribe to the Toffee Blues. Check out my channel, Jammy Jays. I will see the next one. Come on, you Blues! Get in! Adios!
So, guys, he seems pretty happy, that Edward, despite being completely chilled to the bone, because that's what I heard. I heard it was the worst away end in terms of cold ever. What do you guys... I mean, is that the kind of thing that... It seems like a pretty common away win reaction, you know, despite the weather, right?
Yeah, I think that definitely. And I know what you're saying, what a game. Certainly, from what I've seen, it wasn't the spectacle that he made it out to be. But I think given the conditions and the fact Stoke had 10 men made it difficult for us, scoring in the last 5-10 minutes, it's always going to elate the away supporters, isn't it? So...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It seems like a lot of that was, we've been so miserable today. We're so happy that something has paid this off and we don't have to regret our choice to be here. You know what I mean? Plus, Cenk Tosun's starting to pay off, yeah?
Yeah.
Serious question, because I've never been to an away match. How do these chants start? You know what I mean? Like, is it really arbitrary? How does that even work?
It normally starts on the back of the coach somewhere, and then
and
it kind of, you know, almost floats through the fan base, and then everyone starts picking up on the lyrics if it's a good one, and everyone jumps on it, and then before you know it, it's booming.
That's amazing. See, I've never been... I've never been around for the birth of a chant. You know what I mean? Like, I've been, the only games that I've been to where they actually like chant or sing at all, U.S. national team, there's a absolutely dedicated group of supporters called the American Outlaws. And basically they chant, but a lot of the chants seem kind of grabbed from other places. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they've appropriated them from and kind of made them work. Which you do see that often for teams kind of using other songs and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, it's just kind of, it's fascinating to me. I don't know. Yeah. We've kind of naturally been progressing toward this. So let's get into our Stoke match reaction, our initial thoughts. Max, initial thoughts. I'm sure you're going to comment on Adam's red card and the, whether or not it was a red and all that kind of stuff. What did you think of that game?
Well, I missed the first 45 minutes because, you know, I was busy with life and other things.
Life.
But the reactions that I was seeing on Twitter from the fan base and people who were reporting on the game, that Everton were really underwhelming in the first half. I saw the Davies chance, the free header, which really should have been in the back of the net. And I think particularly when you have chances like that, should be goals cut and dry, that it adds to the frustration. And I think I was watching Theo Walcott's post-match reaction, and he said, you know, even though Adam did get sent off, which I do believe it was a red card because it was reckless, really reckless, 2 feet off the floor. And, you know, he had no argument. He went straight down the tunnel. But Theo Walcott said, you know, we really experienced the rougher side of Stoke. I know me and Jerry were talking about it prior to the game, that Stoke are kind of stuck in between these two identities, and I think Everton really experienced the former Stoke identity, really, the kind of rough, clatter the man type of game. I think something that I really want to comment on was that first substitution, where I know Davies did take a good few heavy challenges, but that substitution was quite possibly the most bizarre substitution I think I've ever seen an Everton manager make in my lifetime. It really is. No, I honest to God, I couldn't really pick up on where Calvert-Lewin was playing. I think he had quite a poor game as well, by all accounts, but the decision, you know, when you got Davy Klaassen on the bench as well, that substitution really baffled me. But second half, I think we just carried on plugging away. I think particularly, again, I'll comment on it again, the fact that we've got Baines and Coleman back has been an absolute godsend. We don't realise how much we've missed them. I think both of them are always involved, and it gives us another man pressing down the wing. And of course, Cenk Tosun. Not much more needs to be said about him. He can't play in the snow, apparently, but again, he scores, and he scores again.
Yeah. David, what do you got, man?
Yeah. I was stuck watching the delights of Yeovil v Coventry. And trust me, it was cold, and it's even worse when you're not watching Everton. You're stuck watching Crewe, let me tell you. So, yeah, but I did watch the game in the evening. I watched it back, the full game. I didn't know the score, but I just wanted to see how we played. And, yeah, I'll be honest, it wasn't a great performance again. It's the running theme, really. We still managed to pick results up even when we don't play that great at home. So to kind of do that away was really good. Tosun is just absolutely made up with that. I was chuffed because it kind of feels like at the moment, which, you know, going back to the match reaction video Edward recorded, you know, I think everybody's just buzzing to have a striker again that they can really get behind and see him scoring goals and being a threat up top and a bit of a target man. And, you know, we haven't had that since Lukaku, obviously. And even at times it was strange with Lukaku because of the way his persona was and his attitude. So it's great to have Tosun doing that. You know, two massive goals that won us the game. And we got a bit fortunate, I think, with the red card. It was a sending off, but, you know, considering how long we haven't won away for, we only won that one away all season. I think we needed a little bit of luck to get that first away win and kind of get the monkey off our back a little bit. you know, as having the best part of an hour to play against 10 men is perfect, really. Conditions weren't great, but, you know, both teams are playing in the same conditions, so I suppose you can't use that as too much of an excuse. But, yeah, just a really big win. You know, we were pretty down about our chances of winning another away game all season. Stoke are fighting for the lives, so I'm happy to hit that 40 points as well.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to mention was the conditions. And I feel like that was... I don't want to necessarily blame the sloppy play on both sides on the conditions, but, I mean, it's the obvious thing to point to, you know? Because, I mean, there were a lot of misplaced passes by both teams. Yeah. It was really sloppy, sloppy game. I was delighted to get the win, I'll be honest. I was psyched. It was my birthday weekend, and I just turned 40, and... That happens. It was such a good day. It just started the best day for me. You know, that happened. And then I went hiking with my family. And then the basketball team that I wanted to win that night won their game. And I was like, all the weekends of all my teams just shitting on my head. Finally, you know, it turned around and it felt so good. You know, it was such a, such a wonderful day. Oh my God. So, I was just psyched that the ball bounced our way. You know, that first goal didn't have to. You know, it was the pinball in there. It really was. And Tosin, you know, by being in the right place and finishing strongly, he got the goal. It wasn't some amazing move by him. It was just brains and finish. You know? Mm. Now the second goal, holy hell, that header, yes. The crazy thing is what Tosin brings is what Koeman wanted so bad for us for so long. I think it's ironic that we finally get him way after Koeman's gone.
Yeah, it's painful that we never made that sign in the summer, because you do start asking. I mean, you could, this whole year could be what ifs, but even stripping down everything else that's been negative, just having someone like Tosin there all year could have made the difference really between top seven and where we are now.
Oh yeah. It's just, one more word about the conditions. Did you guys notice that the Stoke grounds crew cleared off their goal, but not ours? Just so our keeper and defenders would slip down and the ball would bounce crazy.
Yeah. We do the same, though, let's be honest.
Do we really? We do the same. I've never seen that. So you would know better than I would.
I think we would. I've
seen this excess watering of the pitch. I've seen that on one half.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that before, but I don't know.
Okay, then I don't feel as like... Because when I saw that, I'm like, oh, Stoke, you've earned your crappy standing right now. You know what I mean? But if we do it too, then, you know, I don't feel quite... Yeah, I feel kind of like a dick for feeling like that then. So
I saw quite a comical tweet after the game. I think it was from a journalist. Forgive me because I can't remember the name. It said, man of the match for the game was Nick Pope.
I saw that.
You know, the two absolute blangers, really, from Butland and Pickford. Three points at the end.
I feel
of the
like Pickford's was marginally. I don't really feel like it was that bad. Yeah, he should have come out, but it's. I don't know. I feel like that was a bit tight.
Yeah. Did you see who lost his man? Who was actually on Choupo-Moting? Who scored?
Was it Baines?
I think it was Baines.
Yeah.
And you know what? I just want to be clear. I want to be really clear. Baines is a godsend, and I'm super happy he's back.
Yeah,
but he sort of lost his man there. Just saying,
yeah.
He did. and Davies didn't really have the best game. Got himself in some good positions. Took some hard shots.
Yeah,
he really did. Didn't have his best game. And I will make a note that despite the bizarre substitution, our performance did get a little stronger after. The sub was made. Was he intending for Calvert-Lewin to be more of a 10 or to play like a second striker? Because it was weird the where his positioning was. You know what I mean?
I do think that was the case. But his performance. Just I can see what you're saying. We did create a lot more chances when he came on the pitch. But, you know, if you think back to, you know, I think there was one in particular where there was a great ball, I think it was by Rooney, a great ball was played by Rooney.
Dude, so bad.
And if the touch was perfect, the touch was fine, he would have been in through on goal. But I think he just completely cocked the touch up and let us down big time.
In that one pass that he didn't make to Jim Tosin.
That was another one. Tosin was on his hat trick as well.
Yeah.
That's the difference between like good plays and great plays for me, because it's not always about scoring the goal. Sometimes it's just about creating a perfect goal. That was a real bad one. Calvert-Lewin and Davies are just, it's hard. They are really inconsistent, aren't they? But that's youth, I suppose, isn't it? So it's really hard to get so much, give them so much stick, because they are still young, but they are very consistent this season. Mm-hmm. Inconsistent, sorry.
Yeah, I mean they're getting to play a lot. They're performing. I mean, they're giving us quality minutes for the most part. Mm-hmm. They are. So I'd say I'm pretty damn thankful they're here too. You know, I want them playing consistently. I think Davies right now has earned a little bit more minutes than DCL. DCL getting a little bit of time coming in. I think had he finished that one chance and squared that ball to Tosin, we'd be a lot more positive. But it's those clinical moments. You've got to take advantage of those. And he's young. More times he's there, the more he'll do it. I feel fine about him. One other thing I wanted to mention about those changes, the tactical change there, it may not have had anything to do with DCL coming in. It may have had everything to do with the fact that we were playing against 10 men and they were getting more tired the way the game progressed. Because our goals happen later. And that's the way it usually works when you're playing against a team with 10 men. You know? Yeah. So it may not have been tactical at all. It may have been very practical.
Yeah. He is very energetic.
Yeah. So, I guess it made sense that they would get their only goal on a set play. That seemed like that was their best opportunities around set plays. Yeah. Any other thoughts on this, guys? I'm psyched we got the win. I didn't really care that it was a little ugly. I just wanted an away win. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Especially when we let them come back into it, you know. How many times have we done that this year? And it could have been quite a frustrating result in the end. So I'm glad that bit of quality from Tosin got us the win, because we definitely needed it. And that would have been a real, not that there was much momentum before the game, but considering we won last week, that would have been a real momentum killer not winning that, because there would have been no excuses.
Very true. We thought it would be a good idea to have a conversation about Cenk Tosun, but not just about Cenk Tosun, but about the Turkish football fans, right? Because it's been, well, just to kind of give you an idea, he had a great game this weekend. If you've been living under a rock, he got two goals at the weekend. We won 2-1, wonderful times. And Edward, who is on our channel, posted an instant match reaction. You know, and they were chanting Tosin's name. That video got 13,000 views, and it's still counting. And our Tosin-based videos have a total of over 25,000 views, okay? The Turkish fans are really supportive of Tosin in the Premier League, okay? Mm-hmm. And hence, they're also really supportive of Everton. And, I mean, our subs for our channel are up. Thanks to Tosin supporters, the Turkish football fans. It's been great. There have been calls. A lot of Everton supporters have said they want to see a Beşiktaş Everton friendly, and a lot of Everton supporters have come out and said, "Look, I want to go to Beşiktaş and see a game. I want to see a match there." So it's beginning to be a reciprocal thing, which is awesome.
An affiliation, you'd probably call it.
Yes. Edward, by the way, for the Turkish football fans who are watching, Edward has asked me to tell everybody thank you the kind Turkish football fans have been watching all his stuff and subbing, and they've said a lot of nice stuff to him. So that's my message to you from him. He appreciates it. And thanks for us as well, just saying. So let's talk about this. Have you guys ever seen, let's say, English fans feel that way about one of their own who has gone to another country and performed well?
No, because I feel like we're a lot more loyal towards our clubs rather than individual players, and I think it's a lot more common for British to have ill wishes towards players who leave, particularly on bad terms, to clubs in a different country, etc. But just on the Turkish fans, I think the reason why it's such a boom, really, is that a lot of the Turkish players that have played in the Premier League before were really early to mid-2000s, and obviously the phenomena of social media was still in its infancy, if not at all about at that time. So obviously, and of course, I think a lot's down to Cenk Tosun as a person and as a player. I think he's a very much beloved son of Turkish football in a way. Even rival fans seem to have a lot of love for him, and they're very passionate. I feel like they're probably a lot more passionate than the British in certain ways, and they seem to, you know, the way the club colours on the sleeve and the way they support Cenk Tosun, I think, is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it's difficult to relate, I think, for British players, because not many end up growing abroad. If you do, they don't necessarily represent kind of, I don't know, the city that they've come from, because in England, certainly, you seem to do the rounds at many clubs before you almost break it through to the first team. And then, as Max said, if they leave, chances are it hasn't been on the best of terms. But, you know, Besiktas are a massive club. And I think the only, maybe, you know, annoyingly for them, you know, they're always there, European platform every year, but maybe because the Turkish league isn't as strong as the Premier League, that they kind of have to accept that some of these great players like Tosun might end up coming to England. But I think the way they react to it's perfect. You know, they're not bitter about it. They don't hate the player, don't hate the club they're going to. If anything, they embrace it. Yeah. You know, they understand in their own right, they're a massive club, but maybe the league isn't the best. So, you know, some players do come to play the trade in England, which is considered one of the best leagues. So, yeah, it's great that they embrace it, and we thoroughly enjoyed it, haven't we, when we've seen them come up on the comments and the views. It's been great. And said I had a little soft spot for Besiktas anyway when they knocked Liverpool out of the Europa League a couple of years ago. I enjoyed that one. So, I mean, this is fantastic. Thoroughly enjoying seeing them popping up all over our timeline.
See, it's the unity that their country seems to have about the sport. It's like if one of their own goes out, it brings up the football of the entire nation.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just that, hey, it brings Besiktas up. It's also Turkish football.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, because I do think, like you said, David, I do think they realize the Premier League, more money in that league, stronger league overall if you go from top to bottom. Although I will say there are some Turkish teams that can definitely would definitely be stronger than some of the Premier League teams, if I'm going to be honest. That is the case. And I do think Turkish league is slowly growing in terms of strength. You know, you see that when you see Besiktas, you know, do well in Champions League. I actually think that first game, if they hadn't gotten that quick red card, I think had that been a tighter game, the second game would have also been tight. I don't know. I think they're an exciting, fun team to watch. But they're not the only team who's done well in Champions League in the past. You'd seen Galatasaray play well in Champions League as well. So I was trying to think of an American athlete who we would compare to this and get really excited about. You know, I immediately jump to Lance Armstrong, but I can't really do that anymore, can I?
Rock record.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, the closest thing I can think of currently is Christian Pulisic at Dortmund.
Yeah.
who is good. He's really good. And we admit that MLS is not as good as Bundesliga because we have brain one. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we have a brain, so we know that. But the problem is, the difference is that football is not the big sport in America. So it's not this wild, unbridled passion. We have some people, like, I follow Dortmund. I watch Dortmund play because of Pulisic. I do.
Yeah.
You know, my kid watches sometimes, you know. But I also watch Leipzig for Lookman, but that's another story. But the thing is, like, I get the sentiment. I get where it's coming from. And I do think it raises up American football when he does well. I get that. Yeah. And I'm passionate about it. But it's not my whole country. You know?
Yeah. I think in a sense, particularly in the case of Pulisic at Dortmund, he almost becomes a poster boy for the country. You know, and I think that's similar to what it is with Tosin at the minute, really. You were saying how impassioned they are about football, and I think the proof of that is Everton. As soon as Tosin came in, Everton set up a Turkish official account, and the numbers on that account have absolutely rocketed. Cause, I mean, it's very central to Tosin and everything that Tosin does, but, you know, it's a market that we've really tapped into well, and it's brilliant. You know, it shows the club has the initiative to acknowledge things like this and take advantage of it. But of course, as I say, it's great to see such support, and it's genuine support as well. It's not just specific to Tosin, because we've saw, you know, when he first come in and he struggled to get into the team. You know, the Besiktas fans were very critical in her, and rightly so, because we were just as critical. And you know, it just goes to show they are real footballing brains. They're not just impassioned fans. They're really, you know, clued in about the game and know what they see.
And they were very critical of the service he was getting.
That's the only thing I've found a little bit frustrating, that they've come in when we've been so poor. You know, loved us to be at the level I think we should be, and we have been previously. And then, you know, they're stuck watching us putting in these performances under Allardyce. But hopefully they stick around and long enough to see us being something more than that.
And I think they understand that. A lot of times what you see is they mention tactics, and they mention lack of service, and a lot of times it's due to tactics, and that makes sense, and I think we'd all agree with that for the most part. Yeah. I mean, it's tough for a big target man who is great one touch finisher to get a lot of goals if he's not being given anything, or if he's being isolated up there by himself. Man, I just haven't seen anything like it before. I really haven't. You know, I mean, what, the U.S. curling team at the Olympics? We just don't have anything like this. It's pretty amazing, and it's very clear that they, I mean, they have some other really good players from their country who are currently in other leagues. You know, in Serie A, in Bundesliga. I mean, there are good players from Turkey in those leagues. Yeah. And I think just the idea of making sure they're fairly represented in those leagues, because they have talent. I mean, right now, Cenk Tosun's the only Turkish player in the Premier League. There's no others, which is kind of fascinating to me. But because of this, there's going to be more.
There's
definitely going to be more. So I'm glad we're the ones that took the chance on one right now. It's really cool. I've had people from Turkish football fans sending me direct messages on Twitter and all kinds of stuff. It's just, they're for real, you know? Guys, do you have any other thoughts on this? It's the kind of thing I haven't seen a lot of in my life. It's just unique.
Yeah. Tosin Pasha.
Yes. Or the way I've got. Snowsun Pasha. That's right. My wordplay is shameful. I'm sorry. I'll get my coat. Anyway, I guess that's it for our... I mean, I don't really have a clever name for this. The Everton Tosun Besiktas phenomenon. Yeah, that's the best thing I got. All right, guys. So there has been a new little story that came out in Ojogo, or maybe it's Ojogo in Portugal. But basically, it's Fonseca stuff. More Fonseca. Yeah, and I'm fine with speculation about Fonseca. Bring it. You know, I just don't know if this is really based on anything. So we'll see. But the words is, you hear a lot of rumors that we've identified him as a target and we've been talking to him already, la, la, la. Apparently, I mean that happened in November. But Ojogo says that Fonseca fancies his chances in the Premier League, in English football, and also mentioned that it also mentioned we're PSG. They're not in England, but apparently they're considering him as well. That's a huge opportunity, but again, it's in France. But they don't mention a fresh approach from Everton, right? Supposedly the word is that Fonseca has supposedly put signing a new 2-year contract at Shakhtar on hold. So, does this mean anything?
Potentially. I think if you look at his Instagram page, as far as I know, it's a genuine Instagram page of his.
Yeah, I believe so.
But people always comment on it with Everton-related content that he likes personally. And to some, that may sound so petty, but I don't know. Why would you do that unless you was interested in? I think the Premier League is like the holy grail, isn't it, for managers? So while we're not an elite club in the league, are we? We're certainly the next tier down, even despite this year. So I think he's definitely interested, and I think it's a very viable option that'd be good for both parties.
Relating to that, we need to check out if he's liking posts about other clubs.
Let's not go half like detective here. Let's just go full blown Sherlock Holmes, like yes. Jerry said. Yeah.
Let's tap into some of my obsessive tendencies and let's check out. Well, it's unhealthy for me, but good for you guys as far as information.
Let's just tap into hackers' websites and social media.
Check all his online activity. Yeah. I feel like when you mentioned the potential PSG link there, I think. Even if that is the case, I'd be more than happy if Everton approach Unai Emery. I think he was absolutely fantastic at Sevilla. To be honest, I'm feeling relatively happy with the options that seem to be slowly unraveling as available toward this summer. And I think obviously the two main front runners, Marco Silva and Fonseca, I'd be happy with Silva. I know a lot of people might disagree with that, but I'm leaning more towards Fonseca, obviously due to his experience with Shakhtar, winning titles, always involved in the Champions League. But again, if that, obviously the proposition of managing PSG, I'm sure he'd jump at that if he was proposed it. And obviously if that leaves Unai Emery without a job, then we know Mashiri likes going towards big names.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly feel like that should be one that we tap up.
I agree.
Yeah, I think there are people getting a little carried away saying that because Big Sam has some wins, they're thinking if we end up in seventh that he's going to keep his place. I think last Friday or last Thursday, Max and I did a video talking about how Mashiri was interested in Moyes. But he didn't appoint Moyes because he didn't think that the fans would support that movement. So I think if Mashiri is really caring about being tapped into the fans, there's going to be some kind of managerial change this summer, if not in May, which I guess sort of is the summer.
Yeah.
Hair splitting time. So, I agree, Max and David. There's gonna be some good options, I'm probably gonna be okay with any of them that we get. I'm really excited. So, but honestly, right now Zorro is going to be at the front of my list.
Yeah,
and it's top of mind as well.
Yeah, right on. you guys have been Everton supporters for quite some time. So usually when we do a Remember Me video, I tend to lean on your experience and expertise. But in this Remember Me video, I know something about this player. All right? I actually bring something to the table, which is so rare here. But you guys, I believe it or not, I actually never watched him when he played for Everton. Okay? So let me quickly run down this guy's career. Oh, by the way, we're talking about Landon Donovan. I'm just going to say it. You know, it's in the description. You knew. So apparently in 1999, he was with Bayer Leverkusen. All right, he started with their younger team. They moved up to the senior team. And between 2001 and 2004, he was loaned out to the San Jose Earthquakes. For them, he had 87 appearances and 32 goals during that little span. Then he moved to the LA Galaxy, where he was there from 2005 to 2014. All right. Now, some of those years he was on loan. We'll talk about that in a minute. But for the Galaxy, he had 253 appearances and 113 goals. All right, which is solid.
Good return.
Oh yeah. The in 2009 he was loaned to Bayern Munich. That happened, which also is kind of awesome. He only had 6 appearances and no goals, but it happened. 2010, he was with the Blues. Huzzah! All right, didn't have a lot of goals, but he had two good ones. All right, played pretty well. And then he went back to LA, and then he came back to Everton in 2012. He ended up with 7 appearances and actually had 7 assists, I think. Not quite as stellar of a second run, I think, as the first one. And there was a time where we actually wanted to make it permanent, I believe. But LA Galaxy was like, nope, we need him. So then in 2015, he retired. No kidding, he retired. But then he came back, played for the LA Galaxy for a year, and then he retired again in 2017. And then guess what? He unretired again. Now plays with Leon in Mexico. He's got 6 appearances, no goals yet. But he's playing, and I think it's great. All right, so guys, really quick thoughts on Landon Donovan when he played for Everton. Who wants to start? David, you want to start? Max has been starting lately.
It's funny, even with a fairly solid CV, before he came, I only knew him as the guy who fell out with David Beckham while at LA Galaxy. I don't remember that, but I think he made a few comments about kind of Beckham getting all the headlines at LA Galaxy. But then he came and I thought he was fantastic. Like I really fell in love with him. You know, he's one of these players that would never seem to be fantastic at one particular thing, but he's just an all-round good player. You know, he come in and had an instant impact. I can't remember if I don't know if he scored on his debut. Maybe I'm getting carried away there, but I just remember them playing really well. And he just had such a good spell with us. And then obviously he come again, played well again. And yeah, everybody was hoping we could get him on a permanent. It didn't work out. But I love that he really embraced the club. You know, I had him on Twitter, and although it was going back a few years, obviously you got to see the kind of things he was saying and doing at the time. And I remember him dressing his young kids in Everton kits, even when he'd gone back over to LA. And he just really fell in love with Evertonians in Goodison Park. And I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, Everton fans love nothing more than that type of character, and he was fantastic.
Yeah, I think with Landon Donovan, he was one of those players who got it, you know. But I think I remember one of his first comments where I think it was to Tim Howard when he said, you know, they've given me the number 9 shirt. So straight away he kind of understood the responsibility that was put on his shoulders. And then going back to what David said earlier, you know, he seemed to be one of these all-rounders, which I think fitted in with the kind of industrial nature of the Moyes side at the time. I think we played them predominantly down round the right hand side, and if I'm not mistaken, I'm sure his first game was that game against Arsenal in the snow, away at the Emirates, where Pienaar got the chip, I might be going out on a limb with that one, but I think that might have been his first appearance, and I think he played absolutely brilliantly. I don't think he scored, but I just remember him saying one of his first things he said was, you know, flying over from LA, sunny beaches, first thing he landed in England, and it was covered in snow.
Yeah, you might be right. I know people will be watching it screaming at us saying it was this game or
yeah.
So I apologise in advance. I know if that wasn't his first game, it was certainly one of the first games.
But I
thought his debut was Goodison, but I just can't remember. But I just remember being really impressed with him.
Yeah, US national team, he had 157 appearances with 57 goals. Okay, I was really kind of agitated. No, I was agitated. I was kind of pissed when he retired. He had another falling out. So I guess he's fallen out with a lot of people, but with Klinsmann. When you hear interviews with him, he's direct and he states his opinion. And he's kind of blunt at times. There are times where I don't like his bluntness, and I wish he wasn't as direct, but that's his style. That's actually the way he plays as well. He plays very direct. He's, you know, slashes through incisive passes. He's a direct player. And he's smart. He knows where to be to get the goals. I think the goal that I think of when I think Landon Donovan is his goal against Algeria in the World Cup. He's had some famous goals for US national team. And the real shame is that he is still playing right now. And he's, you know what I mean? And he could have been, you know? It's a shame when you think, here's this guy who's iconic, maybe taking it a bit far for U.S. soccer, but he was our best player for many years.
I agree with you wholeheartedly there. I was just going to say, you know, you've mentioned that is in playing for Leverkusen and for playing for Munich. Again, that kind of reinforces the German-American connection we were talking about Pulisic earlier. But I feel that during that time period, Landon Donovan really was the poster boy for U.S. soccer. And I don't think...
Stuart Holden, wasn't there? They were kind of internationals over in the Premier League. Because you remember Stuart Holden was at Bolton when he was still a Premier League side before he had that leg break. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I don't think you're far-fetched there at all calling him iconic. I think he certainly was.
Yeah, he's just one of those, I think about him, and I immediately am thinking, oh, what could have been? You know, because he is a smart player, and he could have adapted his game kind of the way Rooney has adapted his game, a little bit in the way Clint Dempsey has started to adapt his game, passing more, getting his head up more, not trying to outrun people, trying to play with their brain and with their vision. They already were smart players, but just kind of depend on that more. You get more longevity out of your career when you do that. And I think he could have done that. I haven't watched him play for Leon yet, although I do watch Mexican League games. I'm a nerd, and they're fun.
What are you doing watching football, Jerry? Watch Bundesliga, the Premier League, Mexican League.
I've watched CONCACAF Champions League. They come on at like 10 p.m. at night on the Spanish language channel here, and I watch them with the Spanish language. It's just great. They have like the best commentators. They're amazing. They like never stop speaking. It's it's brilliant, and I do understand some of it. Believe it or not, 12 years of Spanish, I better. So, I haven't watched him play yet. I was really psyched. I thought it was a bold move. It's such a bold move to say, you know what, I'm going to come back, and I'm not going to come back in a comfort zone. I'm going to go over here, you know?
Yeah. Is he still involved with the board at Swansea? Do you know?
I thought he was.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything new about that.
Yeah, not too sure.
There's some strange board at Swansea connections.
Yeah.
And if you want an even stranger list, this is a little off topic, but look at the new LAFC team, MLS team. Look at their list of owners sometime, all right? It's just so many famous names, you would not believe it. Like film producers, actors. Yeah. Will Ferrell's on that list, by the way. Yeah, no kidding. Swansea is not quite as ridiculous in terms of their personnel and their owners list. But yeah, he's on there. So anyway, but Yeah, he's one of those. I kind of got angry when he was gone. So I'm glad he's back, but he's not going to play for the national team anytime soon, no matter who the manager is. He's just older. And right now, the U.S. team is like, we need them to be 18 or less. Because it's going to be another 4 years. So if you could compare him to a current Everton player, is there anybody at all?
I hate that question.
Oh, no.
I always do it because I like it. I don't know why. It's fascinating.
Seamus Coleman. I know it's
a little pitch.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's not a bad shout.
Interesting. That was not one I would have guessed. Wow.
Yeah, I thought
of that. Mm. Who would you compare him to, Jerry? You're going to say Nias?
No. I think he's way more skilled than Nias.
Yeah, definitely.
I think he's got a lot better vision than Nias.
The eyebrows going, I thought. Not Nias.
No. The problem is I don't really have much of an answer. That's the issue, you know? I mean, I see him a little bit of... I don't think he's that good at taking on a man as Ademola Lookman. You know what I mean? And he's not quite as quick. But he is quick. Mm. You know? And I think he's got better vision than Lookman right now. I'm trying to think of a small wing/center player who actually... You know, I don't think Sigurdsson matches. It's just tough. No. You know, yeah. I was trying to think of a forward-based player, kind of like a Walcott, but he doesn't have the speed of Walcott.
No.
Take the speed away from Walcott, and it's very close to Landon Donovan, actually. You know? Because he doesn't have the power of Bolasie. He doesn't have the power of the ball as a Vlasic. Yeah. I mean, I'm running out of players here, guys. Mm. You know? Because as far as being like a number 10 character, we don't have a 10 that really plays like him.
No.
Davies doesn't play like him because Davies isn't really a 10, but he's sort of playing like it now.
Yeah, he was like a winger for those really, Donovan.
Yeah.
So he's a strange character in terms of where you play him. You know, he's got the vision of a 10, but the skill set of a winger. So yeah, it's weird. Dang, I didn't think you'd turn that around on me. I was gonna trust you guys' insight on that one. And so as far as your favorite US players, how does he rank? US Everton players.
Oh, I was going to say.
Yeah.
In terms of longevity, I'd still give it Howard because although it turned sour, with Howard, he still gave us a lot of service and he was another one who really fell in love with the club. But yeah, he's up there definitely. He's probably in there after Howard for me.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit too young to be saying Joe Max Moore or
Brian McBride.
I think I've got my own personal reason because I've met Tim Howard several times and he's one of the nicest men in football that I've ever met. So, but Tim Howard, definitely top of that list, but Landon Donovan, close second.
Yeah.
The closest I've come to Tim Howard was when I went to the national team game in Columbus and I was about 20 rows up, and I took a picture, and he was like a little tiny dot. Couldn't even see him. I had to like zoom in for anybody to see it. That's the closest I've been to Tim Howard. So, yes, more envy. Yeah, can't help it. Yeah, I'd say Tim Howard as well. I agree. Agreed. And I don't think he should have been starting the last two, maybe 3 years that he was at Everton. I was just... screaming for someone else to get an opportunity. I guess Martinez like owed him money or just was in love with him.
Grossly mismanaged towards the end of his Everton career.
Yeah. I didn't think that was too fair for him. Tim Howard, though, if you take like 30 shots on game at him, he'll be great.
Yeah.
He'll be great, you know? But one or two shots on game, that's where he was struggling. He didn't have the same. He almost needs his concentration to link to his explosive, you know, instincts.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess that's all for our and we were talking about Tim Howard. Now it's Landon Donovan who we're talking about actually. So that's it for our Landon Donovan segment. We're going to finish up the show with some old transfer rumors that the kind admin at the Toffee Blues website has sent our way. All right? His name begins with a J. So here's some old transfer rumors. We're going to start with August 24th, 2010. A bizarre article links Peter Crouch to Everton. It was a strange article in The Guardian, and it was hard to tell what was actual, like, actual information and what was a joke. The line that actually linked Crouch to Everton, I don't know, was oddly worded when it was talking about him being so desperate to be able to go to Everton. It was strange. It was really weird. But apparently, it was an article linking him to us.
Who was he at the time? Was it Tottenham?
Spurs. Yeah.
See, I actually do remember that one and being like, yeah, you probably take that.
I'm just thinking, what were our striking options at the time? Joe and Ichibi.
Louis Saha.
I like that.
You probably would have took it. He was a good player. Those years where he was at Portsmouth and Spurs. And I think, obviously, his missus is from Liverpool, isn't she? So maybe it was a way of getting back to Merseyside.
Yeah, he stayed with Spurs until 2011, and then he went to Stoke. So I guess that was kind of the beginning of him thinking about leaving. So next, in 2010, apparently... this was in May of 2010, though. Moyes was keeping an eye on Craig Bellamy, who at the time was at Man City. He ended up going to Cardiff on loan and then later to the Shite. But Moyes apparently was liking him when he was at City.
That is peak Moyes, to be fair, isn't it?
Yeah, he broke my heart, Craig Bellamy. I'll never forget that, right? The FA Cup semi-final. Last few minutes, he gets the free kick that plants right on top of Andy Carroll's head. And I just came off the bench.
Free kick, did he?
Yeah, he took the free kick. I remember every little detail about it because it was quite possibly the worst moment of my life.
it was Seamus Coleman that gave that free kick away, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. We just about forgive him, I think.
So, lastly... this one is going to go back a little farther. Go back a little further. See, got my farther and further right.
Hey.
Yay, language nerd. So, this was an interesting one. This was a time when James Milner of Newcastle was supposedly topping Moyes' transfer list, and João Moutinho of Sporting was going to cost £20 million. Apparently Everton were also offered Henrik Larsson on a free from Helsingborg. All right, he was a former Barcelona Celtic striker, but he also spent a year on loan at Man U. All right, interesting prologue. Later, he ended up managing Helsingborg, which is interesting because the reason he was offered to us in the first place was he had fallen out with the chairman at Helsingborg. But he ended up managing them in, like, I think 2016 or something. And apparently, he decided to leave the club shortly after some angry supporters attacked him.
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, it shows the player pool there, getting rid of the manager. But then, that was another one that I remember thinking I'd take that because he was really successful at United. I don't know the stats, but he did do well in that year. And we around that stage, we were just kind of always seem to be in for a striker, any striker with money. So it would always be like,
yeah, because it seemed to be the days where Tim Cahill was always playing as like a false nine. So I remember that very well.
And that's it for our old transfer rumors. There's always some weird stuff going on in those. That's it for the big show. All right. Thanks so much. If you're listening via podcast, which you are, why did I even say that? I'm not recording via video. So you've been listening to the Toffee Blues podcast. Thank you very much. Please subscribe to our podcast. Rate it if you can. Leave us a nice review if the spirit wills you to. That'd be awesome. Say something about how soothing Max's voice is. You know? He just did a weird face probably going to blush in a minute. But I was just making something up as I went.
Should have took the compliment.
So, leave us any of that if you'd like. Please check out David's stuff on the Sportsman and on the Toffee Blues website. Additionally, Max is on the Toffee Blues website. They both have a lot of analysis on there. Match previews and just, other stuff. Check out the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Lots of stuff on there. Everything Everton, you'll see it on there. I think that's enough plugging. I have nothing else to plug. All right. Good job today, guys. Thanks for your time. For Max, for David, for me. That's all. Bye.
Thanks.
What's funny is I wasn't recording, so no one will even see that. I really just did the flip for myself.